From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Well, it's Thanksgiving weekend, which for many of us means at least two things, food and shopping. We'll cover both in this edition of our program, starting at the dinner table. For folks who are serious about beer, an aluminum can just won't do. And even a pint glass may be inadequate. At least that's what glassmaker Matthew Cummings says. He spent months studying the factors that he says make drinking a good beer an experience. Now he designs glasses that are made to emphasize flavor, aroma, and temperature.
When you're talking about the tradition of glassware for wine and the breadth of that tradition, when you look at craft beer, there's a much larger diversity of flavor profiles in craft beer. So the glassware is inherently more complicated and more diverse too.
Well, we've got a few of them right here on the table in front of us. Why don't you pick one up and describe it to us and then tell us what it's for and why the shape is important.
Okay, so the first one we have is the subtle beer glass. And it's a tall cylindrical glass with undulations around the bottom two-thirds. For subtle beers, you actually want the carbonation to be able to travel through the liquid.
I'm very interested, by the way, this one that has a partition in the middle of it. Why don't we talk about this one? This one's also cylindrical. It's got kind of a thick wall, maybe 3/4 inch or 1/2 inch thick. But in the middle is a big sheet of glass here that divides it into two halves. Tell us about this.
So this is called the dual beer glass. And this was my response to having an improperly poured black and tan. So a black and tan or half and half is where you have Harp and Guinness or Bass and Guinness. And you pour one beer on top of the other with a jig that's like an inverted spoon. So it pours it very softly, the second beer. And then they actually have different specific gravities. It makes one lighter and one heavier. So they'll actually, like oil and vinegar, they stay separated. But this, you don't have to have a jig. You pour one beer into either side. And then as you drink it, it mixes right before you drink it.
Well, all of this is, of course, worlds away from the stereotypical red Solo cup that I think a lot of people consume their beer out of. If somebody is looking into getting more serious about enhancing the experience, so it's not just kind of a mechanical action of drinking beer, but something a little bit more than that, where do you recommend they start?
Like, one, throw your shaker pints away. The conical, basic glass that you see.
So they're almost ubiquitous.
They're everywhere. And those are not designed to be drank out of. They were made to mix cocktails as part of a shaker. So throw your shaker pints away. Don't freeze your glasses. When you freeze your glassware, you're cooling the beer down way, way too much. And as the beer gets cold, it locks in all of its flavor molecules, those volatile aroma molecules. And it's not going to smell as intensely. If you don't get the aroma, you don't get the full flavor. So craft beer, you actually want to drink a little on the warm side and then pour it into a glass. If you don't have any specific glassware for it, a wine glass is fine. And that'll give you a little hint of how much a good glassware will affect it.
Matthew Cummings is a glass blower. He's also the owner and proprietor of the Pretentious Glassware Company in the Old City, which is where we've been talking to him. Matthew, cheers, and thank you so much for joining us on The Method.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Black Friday is just around the corner, and that means the full-court Christmas shopping press is about to begin. What happens to our brains when we buy something for someone else? Is there such a thing as retail therapy? Matt Schaefer-Powell talked with neurologist Ralph Leidick about what happens to our brains when we shop.
What happens in the brain when we make a normal kind of purchase?
It depends on the nature of the purchase, but in the most common sense, areas of the brain that are involved in pleasure, these are areas in the mesopontine area that have dopamine as a neurotransmitter, there's a little release of these transmitters if we're happy with the purchase. And, of course, pain is a fundamental protective mechanism. And the opposite of pain is pleasure, seeking of pleasure. So it's the pain-pleasure areas of the brain that are very much involved and purchasing. Choice is also a huge issue in marketing. How do we make a choice?
And this might also be why some people will, if they're feeling down, they'll go buy something. They get that dopamine.
Exactly. There's a same phenomenon happens with eating. Most obesity is not hormonal. Most obesity, they use the word hedonic from the word hedonism. Most obesity is due to hedonic feeding, eating for pleasure rather than for nutrition. And shopping can be this way also.
So when we go out into the world during this time of year and we see the lights and we hear the music, how does that either complicate or simplify things for the brain in terms of encouraging us to make these purchases?
Advertising is very sophisticated. It's quantitative. They've got a lot of data. The Gallup Foundation, who we all know, we hear Gallup polls, they've mm-hmm. studied over 20 million people, and they found out that most of our financial decision-making, they estimate 70% of it is emotional and 30% is rational.
The odds are stacked against
us. The odds are stacked definitely against you. And, of course, the holidays are a very emotional time. We're thinking back to childhood days, to friends who aren't here for this holiday, friends we'll never see again, and so on. So it's also a very happy time.
In giving, I would suppose, when you buy something to give to somebody, again, you're getting a bit of a charge of dopamine.
Absolutely. And game theory speaks to that. Survival of different colony species has to do with this issue of giving, doing things for other members of the group. Much of this plays on emotions, and it's not necessarily bad, particularly if a person is aware of what's happening. And I think the trick is to be aware of one's behavior, which is, you know, insight is always the most difficult thing for all of us. How do we have insight into our own behavior? Why am I doing this? Is this the right magnitude of the response? Is this the right timing of the response?
How do we explain, from a neuroscientific standpoint, a phenomenon like Black Friday?
This is just an opinion, and I haven't seen any data on this. But it's, I think, part of what Black Friday is about is a competition for resources. And I think it depends on how deeply a person looks into this. It's also good for the economy.
Ralph Leidig, thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. My pleasure.
One last thing to chew on this Thanksgiving weekend. You know that post-lunch haze when you feel you can barely keep your eyes open? For years, people have blamed a chemical found in turkey called tryptophan, but turns out that's a myth. Doctors say actually, you're the culprit. That post-meal sleepiness is likely caused by your body working overtime to digest a carb-heavy dinner. So, looks like it's either salad or a nap, and I don't mind the nap myself. Thanks for joining us on this edition of The Method. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Happy Thanksgiving.